Welcome to Astrology of the Unknown, a true crime podcast where we dig into an unsolved case and then look to the stars for answers. We are your hosts, William Holloway.
And Joseph Mulholland.
So hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, happy Labor Day.
Yeah, wow, the blur feature on the camera is really, it's really blurring out my three-day-old stubble. So what are we talking about today? We're gonna talk about the Ray Rivera case. The Ray Rivera case is a case that is, I think, near and dear to both of us because it takes place in Baltimore. I currently live in Baltimore and William lived here for like, what, 12 years. And I also used to work for the company that Ray Rivera worked for. You know, it literally took place in our backyard. So, all right, here we go. Are you ready?
Yeah. Should I put a picture up?
Put the sexiest picture up of him that you can find.
Okay.
He was a good looking dude. See, that's not even a good picture. And he's like, yeah, listen, I feel like every picture of him is a good picture. I'm not even gonna hide the fact that I have a big crush on him. Anyway, Ray Rivera was born in Madrid, Spain on June 10th, 1973, and he was raised in Southern California in Florida. He was the middle child of a family with an older brother named Angel and a younger sister named Elena. He attended the University of the Pacific, and after graduating in 1995, he actually played professional water polo back in Spain for a few years before returning to Burbank, California in 98 to coach water polo at John Burroughs High School. I did not know water polo was such a popular sport.
I always thought it was one of those things you faked on your college application.
Right, like underwater basket weaving.
Yeah.
Now, Ray's physique should be mentioned here. He was a conventionally attractive man, as pictured. He was tall. Records indicate that he was around 6 feet, 5 inches tall.
Oh, he was real tall.
Yeah, he was super tall. He was athletic, and he was also described as having a winning personality. He was kind, charming, and the life of the party. And unfortunately for us, he was straight. and in a relationship with a woman named Allison. Now, Ray was also an aspiring writer with a focus on screenplays. He made money from coaching water polo and from screenwriting, but he didn't bring in a ton of income. So in 2004, an old friend and classmate of Ray's named Peter Stansberry offered him a job at Stansberry Research. This is where it gets kind of personal for me because Stansberry Research, which still exists, is a financial advising publication that promotes newsletters and research on money management, stock tips, and investment advice. And it's an affiliate company of Agora, which is a publishing house based in the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Baltimore. I can say from personal experience that Agora is a super sketchy company to work for.
So many people, if you've lived in Baltimore, anyone's lived in Baltimore, so many people work there or have worked there over the years.
Everybody I know has been fired from there. Like everybody I'm friends with has been fired from Agora. It's like, we're all trauma bonded by working there.
I applied for a job there, but I didn't get it.
You are so lucky. Now, I'm actually legally bound to not talk about my experience of working there because they fired me after I alerted them that one of their freelancers was plagiarizing material that I was editing, and they refused to admit that it was plagiarized, even though it was plagiarized word for word. And I even ran it through a plagiarism tracker, and it was a 95% match. They actually made me sign an NDA before they would release my severance to me.
Oh, so, my God. I totally forgot about this. That is insane. This place is crazy.
Yeah, so they made me sign an NDA. I'm probably going to get sued by even just saying that, but whatever. So this place is sketchy as hell. They basically buy contact lists and spam old people's email accounts and try to convince them to buy into these newsletters. And then they make it impossible for them to cancel once you buy in. So they make it sound really above board when you start working there, and then you realize that it's all a scam.
Sleazy.
Yeah, so this is the company that Ray started working for. I didn't work for Stansberry Research. I can't speak to that affiliate. I can only speak to the affiliate I worked for, which was a different kind of affiliate. It wasn't a money management affiliate.
And let's also say that Ray worked there in the early 2000s. You worked there about t 10 years later-ish, right? Okay.
So Ray started writing a newsletter for Stansberry Research called the Rebound Report, where he would recommend something called turnaround stocks, which are shares of companies that are performing poorly but have a viable strategy and strong leadership in place to recover and return to profitable growth. Now, it should be noted that Ray wasn't passionate about this line of work at all, but he really wanted to marry his girlfriend, Allison, so he wanted to get his finances in order. So in late 2004, Ray and Allison moved to Baltimore and they bought a house and they ended up getting married in Puerto Rico in November of 2005. Now, between their marriage and the end of 2005, a man named Tom Hickling was actually killed in a car accident while visiting his daughter in Africa. Now, this is important because Tom was one of Ray's work friends. And after his death, Ray expressed feelings of suspicion surrounding the circumstances of the accident. And he kept his specific concerns private. But shortly after this, Ray left his job at Stansberry Research and started his own production company that specialized in making videos for clients. Even though he no longer worked at Agora, he did do business with one of their financial affiliates called the Oxford Club. He did video work for them, basically. He was also working on a screenplay and coaching water polo at Johns Hopkins University. Water polo is popular everywhere, apparently. Now, he and Allison had also started talking about moving back to the LA area after a brief trip. However, in the spring of 2006, things started getting weird back in Baltimore. Allison notes that Ray's behavior had started to change. He seemed paranoid and stressed, and he insisted on going everywhere with her. She said that it felt like he was actually trying to protect her from something. And there's one particular instance that Allison recalls where Ray accompanied her to a track so that she could go jogging, and apparently a man approached the track and Ray ran him off because he thought the man was going to attack Allison.
Oh.
But just like with the Tom Hickling situation, Ray wouldn't discuss why he was suddenly so protective. Another weird thing that happened is that their home alarm in Baltimore went off twice. It went off at 1 a.m. two nights in a row. So it went off at 1 a.m. on Monday, May 15th, 2006, and then it went off again on Tuesday, May 16th, both times at 1 a.m. The first night the alarm went off, Allison recounts that Ray had a look of horror on his face that seemed uncharacteristic of a 6'5" fit, muscular guy in his 30s who didn't really seem scared of anything else usually, except for heights, which is important to the story. The second night, Allison noticed that one of their living room windows had been tampered with. Cops were called both nights, and they just brushed it off, saying that an animal must have set the alarm off both nights. But the alarm never went off after that. Now, what makes this even weirder is that the morning of Tuesday, May 16th, which was right after the alarm went off for the second and final time, Allison had to fly to Richmond, Virginia for a business trip.
Fly.
Yeah. Oh, did she not fly?
No, I just said fly because, like, who flies from Baltimore to Richmond? Just
That's
drive.
what the sources said. They said
What
she.
kind of plane?
I have no idea.
A single engine Cessna, like, what are we talking here? Anyway, go on.
Do we need to put a call out for a research assistant? So maybe she sprouted wings. I don't know. But according to Allison, when she left, she said, "I love you so much." And Ray's response was, "Thank you for loving me so much." I just thought that was kind of weird.
That's very weird.
Later that day, Ray reserved an editing suite to finish up a video project for one of the Agora companies. I'm assuming it was the Oxford Club because he worked with them pretty regularly after he split from Agora. And he also called a Freemason representative to talk about a script idea that he had. I believe he was just doing some preliminary research, and that was corroborated by the Freemason representative when he was questioned later on. Now, in addition to all of this, one of Allison's co-workers was coming to the Rivera house to spend the night because she had a flight out of BWI the next morning to New York. Her name is Claudia. Now, Claudia recalls that she was relaxing sometime between 4 and 6:30 p.m. in the guest room while Ray was in his office talking to someone on his cell phone. Phone records later indicate that the call originated from the Agora switchboard. The phone call was brief, and Claudia remembers Ray shouting, "Oh shit," and then rushing out of the house in flip-flops, which is important, and driving away in Allison's black SUV. She said he returned briefly and then left again in the same vehicle.
Oh.
This is the last time Ray Rivera was reportedly seen alive. Allison tried calling Ray several times that night, but he didn't answer. The next morning, Claudia called Allison right before she left on her flight to New York to let her know that Ray hadn't returned home the night before. All the lights downstairs were still on, and so were the lights in Ray's office. Allison tried to call Ray and he didn't answer. So Allison decided to end her business trip early and head back to Baltimore. She came back to discover Ray still had not returned home. His laptop was on the kitchen counter, along with his Invisalign retainer, a bag of chips, and some soda water. Later that day, Allison reported Ray missing, and Ray's parents and siblings, as well as Allison's parents, arrived shortly after, along with some close friends of the couple. A wide-scale search was coordinated by family, friends, and coworkers. There was a team canvassing all over the city. Do you have a clip of the fly? There it is. Yep. Ray's friend Porter, he's the one who got him the job at Stansberry Research, even offered a financial reward, hired a private investigator, and alerted the local news of his disappearance. He was described to the press as a happy guy and not the kind of guy who would just up and leave his friends, wife, and community. In fact, he and Allison had had a trip planned to New Mexico, and it didn't make sense for him to ghost on his life by choice. So, after a few days with no leads, Allison's black SUV was spotted in a downtown parking lot. Well, it was like a parking building near the Belvedere, which is a historical building that used to be a hotel. It has since been turned into apartments, a couple restaurants, and bars. There was a parking ticket on the SUV that showed the date of May 16th, which was the night that Ray received that phone call that made him leave the house unexpectedly. After the discovery of the SUV, three of Ray's coworkers spent their lunch break looking for him. Now, the Belvedere, like I said before, is right in the heart of Mount Vernon and in the same exact neighborhood where Agora owns many of their properties. Now, they own a lot of really beautiful old buildings, and that's where a lot of their offices are located.
Okay.
So they decided to go to the top of that parking garage next to the Belvedere to get a better view and look for some clues. And from the top of the parking garage, you can actually see that there's an extension of the Belvedere's second floor off the back of the building. Ray's coworkers spotted a narrow hole in the roof of that second floor extension. Yep, you can see it right there. From that second floor extension, they were able to see the hole, and then scattered on the roof around that hole, they saw two flip-flops, a cell phone, some keys, and sunglasses.
Wow.
And they were just scattered around the hole. Police were called and they came to the Belvedere to search the premises. An employee took them to the area with the hole in the roof, which was determined to be a barely used conference room space. And apparently it was under construction. It wasn't currently being used. The door was opened though, and there was a horrible smell that hit them as they started walking down the hallway.
Uh-oh.
Yep, as they entered the room with the hole in the ceiling, the sunlight coming in illuminated a very gruesome scene. They discovered the body of Ray Rivera sprawled out on the floor under the hole. Because he had been laying there for over a week, his body had already begun to decompose. So, what happened? It's important to note that even though the Baltimore Medical Examiner's office ruled Ray's death as undetermined, the case still remains open. Now, for context, medical examiners will label a death as one of the following causes: either natural, accidental, suicide, homicide, or undetermined. Part of the reason why Ray's death was ruled as undetermined is because the injuries Ray sustained weren't consistent with a fall. We'll just put it at that. There's speculation that Ray's injuries didn't look consistent with an 11 to 14 story fall, which is the estimated distance based on where he could have potentially fallen from, which is the roof of the Belvedere. So usually when someone commits suicide by jumping, they have severe foot injuries. But a majority of Ray's injuries were on the left side of his body, except that his right shin bone was broken, while his right foot actually remained completely unharmed. Board-certified medical examiner Marie Donheimer, I hope I'm saying her name right, believes that Ray's injuries are consistent with someone being beaten to death or hit by a car
Wow.
and thrown over the side of a building.
Oh. Ah.
Miriam Moya, a forensic expert on traffic accidents, impact biometrics, and crime scenes, wrote a book on Rivera, and she agrees with Donheimer. Like with most unsolved cases, the police fumbled the crime scene. They allowed cadets from the police academy to walk around the room. They left doors wide open. They didn't seal the hallway to the public. The parking garage and its video surveillance cameras were never investigated.
Oh, geez.
Part of that is because it was reported that the cameras weren't actually working.
Are they ever?
Yeah, so here are the objective facts. The alarm in the Rivera household went off at 1 a.m. on May 15th and 1 a.m. at May 16th, 2006. We don't know who called Ray the day that he went missing, but we know that the source was from the Agora switchboard. No Belvedere employees, residents, or customers claim to have seen Ray that day. None of the Belvedere video camera recordings place Ray inside or outside the building the evening of May 16th, 2006. The Belvedere video roof cameras were disconnected and not working on May 16th, 2006. Ray was super scared of heights. Ray had no history of mental or emotional health problems outside of this newfound paranoia that he had started to exhibit shortly before
Right.
he disappeared. Ray would have had to run 11 miles per hour to reach the hole his body created, hypothetically, which was the horizontal distance of 45 feet from the edge of the main roof. This eliminates the theory that he was pushed or that he accidentally fell, because if he accidentally fell, he would have created a hole right by the edge of the main building, not 45 feet out. He also actually couldn't have run to jump off of the roof, given that there were so many obstacles in the way, and he was also wearing flip-flops. Like I said, there's that drop-off from the main roof where those
Yeah.
windows are, and it's kind of like a, you know, like a decline like this. So he would have had to like slide down it and then
Yeah.
jump off. Like you, there's no way he could have done that.
No, you'd hit a bunch of stuff on the way down before, and it would slow you down too, right? Like that hole looks like you imagine a body going like straight down. It's like, how?
Yeah, and he had those like shitty new, like those shitty Old Navy flip-flops. Like
Right.
those, they do nothing for you. Ray's phone and sunglasses are placed intact just around the opening of that hole, along with his
Oh.
flip-flops. So his sunglasses and his phone, they weren't broken, they weren't shattered, they were perfectly fine. There was no blood or flesh found on or around that opening in the roof that he fell through. One of the flip-flops, which were brand new, by the way, had a broken band and a fresh drag mark inconsistent with a fall. Ray also had a money clip wallet that he never left home without. It was kind of like a keepsake for him,
Right.
and it was nowhere to be found and still has not been recovered. A fall from that far would have created more severe injuries to his body, but even though his body had started to decompose, his body was overall not in the condition that you would associate with an around 13-story fall. Most men who fit Ray's physical profile who commit suicide by jumping sustain horrific spinal cord, bilateral ankle, heel, and leg injuries. Now let's focus on the word bilateral here, because Ray had minimal, if any, injuries to any of those areas, and none of his injuries were bilateral. None.
Huh.
The initial detective, Marvin Seidner, or Seidner, stated that it seemed like a staged scene. Now, for clarity in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, Detective Mike Beyer was featured as the detective for the case, but he was not the initial detective on the case.
Okay.
That was Marvin Seidner. That same detective, Marvin Seidner, believed the hole was too small for Ray's body to fit through. And according to Allison, Detective Marvin Seidner told her to be careful if she wanted to continue to independently investigate, because if Ray was murdered, which he believed, there would be people out there who wouldn't want the truth to be known. So he was basically like, you better cover your ass. So after Ray's body was discovered, an anonymous individual kept calling the police station to retrieve Ray's laptop. Could it have been his previous employer or one of its subsidiaries? If so, why not just contact Allison to ask for the laptop? You know, I'm assuming like maybe there was work on it that somebody had paid for and they wanted it. I don't know.
Weird, yeah.
Now, there are theories that perhaps Ray had had a sudden mental break, but there is really no concrete proof backing this theory up. But a couple final thoughts that I want to talk about. And it's a very odd possible clue that was discovered while he was actually still missing before they actually found his body. Now, while they were searching for Ray, they were also searching around the house trying to look for clues, and Ray's brother Angel found a note folded up in plastic and taped to the back of the family's computer, along with a blank check from Ray's production company, Ciba Productions, or Ciba, it's spelled Ciba Productions. The note was small, like it had been shrunken down and cut into three parts. Like the text was actually so shrunken down and small that it fit into a series of rectangles that were about 2 by 3 inches, but they were like full paragraphs. Allison says that she knows Ray wrote the note the day he disappeared because there were paper scraps in the trash that can be matched to the shapes that the three sections were cut into. Allison said those scraps were not in the trash can before she left for her trip. So he wrote it that day, or typed it up, or printed it out. I don't want to say he wrote it that day because it could have been on his computer for a while.
Right.
The note is hard to decode and has been used to prove Ray was having some kind of a mental health crisis, but I don't think that the note can necessarily prove that, although it certainly does give us a lot of questions. Part of the note is written in first person, featuring one or more individuals addressing a council or secret society comprised of wealthy, influential people, some of whom Ray knew. The note includes many lists of celebrities, movies, inventions, names of Ray's family, friends, and co-workers. But the note does not include the names of family and friends who played a significant role in his life. So those people were excluded from the note. The note begins, "Brothers and sisters, right now the world volcanoes are erupting. What an awesome sight. Whom virtue unites, death cannot separate." Now, according to author Mikita Brotman, who wrote the book, The Unexplained Death, in its Latin form, this phrase is often used in ceremonies performed by the Knights Templar, and it's still inscribed on the inside of Masonic rings today. It should be noted that before he disappeared, Ray started reading The Builders, which is a book on Freemasonry. And actually, on the day he vanished, he purchased a book called Freemasons for Dummies. And he spoke with a Freemason representative, like I stated earlier. The representative said that the phone call was normal and that Ray just seemed like someone who was interested in learning more about Freemasonry, which aligns with what I said earlier, which is that he was kind of just looking for general information, and people, you know, it's thought that he was writing a screenplay around that secret society. He actually listed a bunch of movies. Among them were National Treasure, Eyes Wide Shut, and The Matrix. And there's also a weird theory that if you lay the pieces of the note out next to each other and look at the negative space between the paragraphs, it actually spells out the word help.
What?
Yeah. Yep. Now, I found a picture of this, and it didn't, I don't know. It looked a little weird to me. It looked a
Didn't
little,
really look like help. It was like a Like you
Yeah.
have to really strain your eyes to see it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I was like, someone's really trying to make that work. And then one last thing. So remember Tom Hickling, who I mentioned at the beginning of this?
Right, he
He's
died first.
a coworker who died while visiting his daughter Holly in Zambia, where she served as a relief worker. Apparently, after the accident, Tom was actually awake and responsive and told his daughter that he would be fine as he was being taken away to the hospital. But according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Tom's wife, Kathy, said that she first heard about the crash when she was contacted and told that there was a dead white man in a car registered to Holly Hickling. And apparently, that always bothered Ray, as it was kind of a mystery unto itself. So it kind of bothered him that he heard these two very differing stories and didn't know
Right.
which one to believe. His friend Porter Stansberry, who had put out, who had alerted the media and helped with hanging flyers and had instated like a reward for information, all that stuff. He has remained pretty quiet as the years have gone on, and he's really distanced himself from the case and from Rivera's family. That has been kind of a suspicious piece of the puzzle. And that's everything that I was able to find on the case. So now I want to hand it over to you, and I want to hear about the astrology and maybe any updates that you have that pertain to this case, because
Yeah.
it's weird.
So I want to start with Ray Rivera's birth chart, and then we'll look at the event chart. And then I also want to look at the Belvedere. Let's start with Ray Omar Rivera. So he was born on June 10th, 1973, in Madrid, Spain. And we don't know the time, of course. And like always, I set the time for 6 a.m. So that makes the sun and the rising sign conjunct. So we don't even have to think about the rising sign. So he was a Gemini, which is ruled by Mercury. And in this chart, Mercury is in Cancer. The moon was in Libra and conjunct Uranus. Obviously, we don't have a time, but I give the moon a wide orb. It was definitely close to Uranus. So that's going to mean that he is someone that it could mean he's very smart, very creative. He might also be someone that's spontaneous and do things very unexpected. He might even surprise himself sometimes. Also, Venus in Cancer. So there's a lot of water going on in this chart, meaning that he's very sensitive. He might have even been really intuitive. Something else I want to note is that on the day he was born, Pluto was stationing, meaning that it's a really strong planet in his chart. In a person's chart, Pluto can just be like intensity, right? It could just mean like that add to like someone being really intense. And then we also have the sun it's loosely square Mars and Pisces. Again, more water. Mars and Pisces, you see that in a lot of artists, creative people. They're also, again, sensitive to the world around them. They see the beauty in the world, but that also means that they can see all the sadness, all the heaviness of the world. And I've also seen people with Mars and Pisces being prone to depression or escapism.
That makes sense.
So that's just getting like a base for like the kind of person he was. I chose, as I typically do, whether someone has been found or not, the last seen chart, I think, is the best one to go with. For this one, Ray Rivera was last seen alive, that we know of, May 16th, 2006, around 6:30 p.m. That gives the event chart a Scorpio rising. Now, the ruler of the first house is always going to be the planet that represents the victim, or the person we're talking about. So that means that Ray is represented by Mars and Cancer. Mars is the planet of drive, assertion, and action. It's related to movement. Think of like athletes when you think of Mars. Mars doesn't like to be in Cancer. That's its least favorite sign to be in.
Why?
One, Mars doesn't do well in water signs. Two, Cancer is like protective, home focused, can be motherly, can be, thinking about others. You see Mars in Cancer in a lot of charts, in like event charts, for instance, recently when right after Donald Trump became president, Mars was in Cancer. And with all the like cuts and everything that was going on, that was very Mars and Cancer, like the cutting without caring about people.
So Mars in Cancer is almost kind of like if you try to push the same sides of two magnets together and they kind of like oppose each other. It's kind of like what I'm.
Yeah. The second thing, so we have that ruler of the first house representing Ray, but then also the moon is a secondary significator. So we look at that. The moon here is in the third house in Capricorn. Capricorn is also not a place the moon likes to be. It doesn't function so well in Capricorn. You know, the moon is about feelings and emotions. A Capricorn's very cold. It can be disconnected from feeling. And so to me, like having both significators in places they don't like to be, my first thought was it's kind of overemphasizing how unwell he was.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Do you
either.
think that there was a mental comp do you think that there was possibly like a mental component to this, like a mental breakdown or like a
I do. I
okay.
do. Yeah. You'll see why as we keep going and looking at all the other stuff.
Okay.
I also want to entertain the idea that someone killed him because we want to look at that what ifs. The moon and Mars were out of bounds. Now, I'm not going to explain right now. That's like a whole class to explain like what an out of bounds planet is and like how you determine when something is out of bounds. It's a whole thing. But I'll just say that when a planet is out of bounds, it means that it is lawless. It's going to be more on the extreme side of its significations. So you see people with planets out of bounds and they tend to be more rebellious. So when the moon is out of bounds, you know, you might see things a little more chaotic. When Mars is out of bounds, you're going to see wild stuff going on in the world. I kind of think of the term beyond the pale. Things are just beyond the pale when these planets are out of bounds. So that I think that's important to note, especially because both of those planets are his significators and they were out of bounds. Looking at this chart, you know, I look at it from a horary perspective, which is a branch of astrology where you look at a chart to determine the outcome of a situation. And so I look at it and I also kind of see a play happening. So you see Mars as Ray, right? Then it's approaching that Saturn at the very top of the chart. To me, Saturn represents, it's kind of like that build, it's kind of the building, it's the Belvedere. It's in Leo. Something that I did read about that he did not bring up, and that's okay. I read about recently was that him and his wife did used to go to the Belvedere to
Oh.
watch the sunset.
Whoa, okay.
And he had looked up on his computer the time for when the sun was setting that day, right before he left.
Got it.
So he went to the Belvedere possibly to watch the sunset.
Wow, okay.
So let's say that that was the truth. It's just wild because here's Saturn in Leo, ruled by the sun, but Saturn is literally the opposite of the sun. It is death. Saturn represents death. So you've got Pluto and Saturn in astrology representing death. Whereas Pluto is more about transformational death, like I think about someone overdosing on drugs, but you know, living to tell the tale and becoming sober and then becoming a drug counselor. That's very Pluto. Whereas Saturn is just death. It's things coming to an end. And so it's just it feels to me like he had a psychotic break of some kind. He went to watch the sun set. I don't know how any other way to like say it, but he was going towards the sun. He was trying to get to the sun.
Weird. Oh my goodness.
That's
Okay.
my, I'm just like, you know, when I looked at the letter and the things, it almost felt like, I just wonder if he like believed in different dimensions and stuff like that. I almost imagine him thinking that like he had a moment where he thought he could like transport or something and he like ran and jumped. I don't know. We'll keep going. Well, maybe I'll change my mind.
But the thing that's so weird about that is that based on the evidence, like there's no way he could have really done that. I mean,
So
like,
they say, so they say.
right. But like 42 feet, for the hole to be 42 feet out from like the edge of the roof. I don't know. I just don't know how that's possible.
Well, he was pretty athletic, though, right? I mean, he was a swimmer.
He was, but he was also wearing those shitty little flip-flops. I
What if he ran without them and he was holding them?
mean, that could be true. I mean, I don't know.
You
I
know, he could have been
honestly, I don't.
holding his phone and the things. So the reason that so he let go of them right before he went through the hole, and that's why they were. I don't know.
I don't
Let's look
know.
at some other things here, though.
Yeah.
So, of course, I looked up some asteroids and some fixed stars. There's an ast This is just wild. There's an asteroid called RIP.
My God.
It's conjunct Saturn. So he's literally like jumping towards death.
My
Not
God.
funny, just wild. So let's go back to the first house a little bit. So because the first house gives us an overall picture of where the victim or person at hand is in their life at the moment that this all was going on. Being in Scorpio and having Jupiter there, I mean, Jupiter expands wherever it is. And Jupiter's in retrograde. Scorpio can be related to dark subject matter. There's an investigative nature and a suspicious slash paranoid even nature to Scorpio. And I just feel like, you know, you can imagine like this kind of paranoia, this kind of like darkness taking over him, and it just being emphasized by this Jupiter, just like something being over the top, possibly something related to the past, you know, maybe something coming up, maybe this. You know, I wonder, I mean, it was 2006, which wasn't that long ago, but when it comes to like mental health stigma, especially for men and men that just aren't typical white men, right? Like, I think outside of American culture, it's been even harder to like admit when like a male might have some kind of mental health crisis. So there might have been signs that his family were just like, we don't believe in that.
Oh, totally. I mean, even still, mental health is especially in men, is it's stigmatized for sure. And that's us speaking, in the year 2025. 2006 was, I mean, the 2000s, especially the mid 2000s, were wild.
Really wild. There was a lot of stuff going on this
Yeah.
year. 2006 was a crazy year. There's an asteroid that's right conjunct Mercury at 23 degrees Taurus called Ono. Literally O-H-N-O. Ono. And it's an asteroid that denotes shock of news or sudden revelation. So I wonder if he got some kind of news that kind of set him off.
Well, the last thing that, Allison's coworker Claudia heard him say was, "Oh shit." And
He
then he
said his last words were, oh shit, while there's this asteroid called Ono conjunct Mercury. Crazy.
Oh, wow. That is crazy.
Yeah. Now, this is also interesting. Loosely conjunct the moon is an asteroid called Laverna, and that deals with the underworld fraud and stealing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then directly across from Mars. So directly across from Mars, remember Mars is Ray. There's an asteroid called Panacea, and Panacea is a term or word usually used for like a cure-all for problems when things are difficult. So, and that's really what the asteroid means as well. It's related to the ethics around a solution when things are difficult and you're trying to find a cure-all. So I just find it interesting that this asteroid that's about a cure-all, and also it's typically not like a positive cure-all, right? Like it's like a slapdash cure-all that's in the long run not the best, but it's just like this is what we got to do. So I thought that was interesting. One other thing. The sun, any astrologers watching this will probably notice this as soon as they saw the chart pull up. The sun is conjunct the very much feared fixed star Algol. And Algol is typically known as the nastiest fixed star in the heavens. It's also known as the demon star or the head of Medusa.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's associated with danger, misfortune, and it's linked to extreme action.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think, though, about this idea that his injuries were not consistent with a fall?
I mean, maybe he did hit some things on the way down, and that's the way, I mean, maybe that's the way it was. Sorry.
No, but I mean, like, no, you're fine. But I think if he landed 45 feet away from the main building, how would he have been able to hit anything on his way down? Like, okay, just to like be gross for a second. Typically, when somebody, jumps is their preferred way of committing suicide, aside from the injuries that I was saying, like how they are typically bilateral, and typically there's a lot of like heel, shin, leg, spinal cord injuries. But none of that stuff appeared on his autopsy. He did have an injury to his right shin, but his left shin was fine, and his right foot was fine, even though his left shin, I guess, was broken or injured. Typically, when people fall, especially from that height, they just like turn to a pile of mush usually. I mean, like, I looked at
I
some,
mean,
I looked
again, back to him being super athletic. He was taller and bigger than most people. I don't know. Maybe he just was tougher to, I don't know.
at some pictures that I can't, when I was doing research for this, that I cannot unsee, because I wanted to see like what a typical scene would look like.
Yeah.
If he,
Oh,
jumps,
geez.
and it's bad, it's gross,
Okay.
and
Well,
the body's
okay.
annihilated. So,
Well, let's look at this chart from the perspective of the possibility that he was murdered and what that might look like. Okay. So
yeah.
that would automatically be the descendant. The descendant, which is the opposite sign of the ascendant or rising sign, is in Taurus. So it's ruled by Venus. So you have Venus in the sixth house. Sixth house is related to work. Right. So then you could say, oh, maybe it's related to work. But Venus is ruled by that Mars. And if Mars represents Ray, Ray has power over that Venus. It just, I don't think anyone else was involved.
Really?
I just don't. I might, I could be totally wrong. It just, this going by the chart, how I would read it. And it could be work related. That might be telling us something about where his mind was. But I don't think anyone else was involved. I don't. Let's look at Ray's chart with the event chart over
Okay.
it. All right. So when you put the charts together, Mars and Cancer is right there in the same house as his Venus, South Node, and Mercury. So, South Node has to do with the past, sometimes old stuff coming up. Mercury has to do with our thought process, like our mental state. And the fact that Mars and Cancer was doing stuff up in that whole Cancer house of his, it says to me that like he was probably having like a hard time mentally, like whether it was depression or maybe just like anxiety or being upset, something was going on in his mind. It was triggering him. Something from the past was triggering him.
He could have also known, he could have also like known something that he wasn't supposed to know that was
For
bothering.
sure.
Like it could have been, I don't like, I do think it's interesting though that he left his job at Agora after his coworker died and that it bothered him so much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that could have played into this as well, right?
Okay.
Let's look at the chart of the Belvedere real quick.
Oh, yeah.
The Belvedere Hotel has been around since 1903. This is the chart of the Belvedere Hotel. It was built in 1903. At the time when it was first built, it was like the place to go and the place to stay in Baltimore. Presidents had stayed there, famous movie stars stayed there over the years. It also had a dark history. Someone committed suicide in the 50s. They jumped out of a window. There have been some other things that have happened over the years that are sketchy. There have been ghost sightings and all this stuff. It has changed ownerships. It's gone through bankruptcy, and yet it somehow has still lasted. It currently, I don't believe you can stay there as a hotel anymore. I think it's fully apartments now, right?
It is. I know somebody who lives in one of those
You do
apartments.
still? Okay. Yeah, but the restaurant and the bar, the restaurants and bar, are still there. I know the Al Bar is something that has been there since the beginning, 1903. I've spent many a night back in the day going to the Al Bar. I didn't have the best experiences, even though I kept going back. I got food poisoning twice there. They have really, which is so interesting, right? Because when it was built, they had a Scorpio moon. They had the Venus and Scorpio, so of course people are getting food poisoning.
Didn't they lose their credit card there too?
Huh? Oh
Didn't
yeah,
they lose your credit card?
yeah. They lost my credit card. They
Right.
let me into making me think that I lost. I said no, you lost it. But yeah, they used to have a really good Cobb salad. I used to like, but I still got food poisoning twice. And you say, why did I keep going back? Because it was cool. It was cool in there. It was a cool space. And I think it still is. I haven't been there in years, but
It is. I was there recently, like within the last 6 months.
okay. It was open December 14th, 1903. It had a Sagittarius sun, Scorpio moon. But I picked 9:30 a.m. because that's when the Al Bar opens currently, and I think it's been that way for a very long time. And they had their grand opening, and from what I can tell, is the bar open, everything opened at the same time.
Wow.
So 9:30 just seemed correct for me, and also gives it a Capricorn rising, which is fitting because Capricorn risings are about longevity, and it's been through a lot, and yet it's still there, and it's still a landmark. So yeah, this is the chart for that. And then briefly about the haunting stuff, though, I do think it's interesting because you have Mercury, and Mercury, which is like the planet of mental processes and all that, across directly opposing Neptune, which is the planet of mystery and illusions and otherworldly planes. It's like, of course, that place is haunted.
Right. Yeah. If you are ever in Baltimore and you drive past it, I mean, it just looks it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it also looks like it's haunted.
Yeah.
It just has that vibe about it.
Yep. All right. So this is the last chart. This is the last thing we're going to look at here. So here is the event chart over the Belvedere Hotel. As you can see, there's a nodal reverse happening. It's like a pivot in like reputation, pivot in what you're known for. So I think that that's interesting, right? Because obviously this has an effect on the history of the hotel. It's part of the Wikipedia page now, right?
Right.
Then you can also see Pluto is conjunct Uranus. Uranus was conjunct Jupiter. This is all just setting the stage for wild, shocking events. And then remember that Ray is represented by Mars and Cancer. It is sitting right on that descendant. And in more ancient astrology, the seventh house and the descendant were related to death and the end of things. So the fact that Mars is right on the hotel's descendant, it was like destined to happen.
Wow.
I don't know.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. So,
Does it all mean? What does it
what
all
does
mean?
it all mean? What do we think? I think I made it pretty clear what I think. I think I think he did. Sadly, I do think that he took his own life. And personally, I feel like the chart reflects that. That's just my perspective. I'm curious, any other astrologers watching this, that looking at the charts that we're looking at, if you have a completely different take, I would love to hear it. What do you think?
Yeah. So I guess my last question is, if he committed suicide, was it something he knew he was going to get up and do that day? Or was it, do you think it was just like a hard pivot from like his life? Because, he had like rented out a studio to do some editing, some video editing. He bought a book that day. He and his wife had a trip planned to New Mexico like a couple weeks after all of this happened. Like, for all intents and purposes, it didn't seem like he was somebody who was closing up shop. Do you know what I mean?
I
So,
think something happened that day
but
that.
what? Like, what was it? Like, the fact that it came, there were, well, at least reports say that the call came from the Agora switchboard. Like,
I don't know.
it's so strange. I think regardless of what happened, somebody knows something that they're not saying. Like,
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
whether it is whoever it was who called him, that person, like, why hasn't that person come forward? Especially since there's a call log and their house guest said that he was on the phone. So he was on the phone with somebody.
Right.
Like, who was that person? I think that that's kind of the missing link here, because no one's ever come forward that said, like, yeah, I was the one on the phone with him.
Right. It's all very odd.
Like, we don't know what made him leave the house so quickly. We don't know what made him return p for a moment and then leave again.
We may never know.
You may never know.
Yeah. So what do y'all think?
Yeah, sound off in the comments.
Yeah, sound off in the comments.
That's what
Let us
people
know what you're
say,
thinking about
right?
this. What'd you say?
That's what people say, right?
That's
Sound
what
off in
people
the comments.
say. Yeah, sound off in the comments. Let us know what you think. Yeah. What do you think of this wild story? What do you think could have possibly happened?
Is it aliens?
Maybe.
That was one of the weird theories that I read that I was like, I'm not even gonna talk about this, which was that he was like dropped from a
Well,
helicopter.
what about a helicopter? Yeah, that's an idea, but
Which would explain like the positioning of the hole, and like that would make that make a lot more logistical sense. But like there would be air, like there would be a report of an air of a craft, you know what I mean? Like there would be a report of a helicopter. Like you have to log those kinds of things.
yeah.
So
I think he fell. I think he jumped.
I just don't know how he made it. I don't know how he jumped 45 feet. Like, there are Olympic athletes, like track and field athletes, that
Could the
can't.
wind have done
I
it?
don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. I know it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But I think that I think he did. I think he jumped.
Wow.
That's my take.
Wow. Well, you heard it here. You heard it here, folks.
Well, this was fun, as always.
Yeah. Well, if you all like this and you have any stories that you would like us to cover, any mysteries, doesn't have to be a murder. It could be like a unsolved robbery, or like it could even be like a ghost haunting or a whatever.
We want to look at it.
Yeah.
Well, till next time, which will be very soon, we've got all kinds of things cooking up.
We sure do. We've already got a little list of stories that we're working on.
We'll catch you later, guys.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.